Welcome to the third series of the HE Knowledge Hub podcast, brought to you by Next Step Southwest, or NSSW. In this series, we're going to be collaborating with fellow UniConnect Humber Outreach Programme, or HOP. They cover parts of Yorkshire and Lincolnshire, and they're led by the University of Hull. We're joined up to bring you unique conversations from industry experts, which have been really insightful, as we've had the opportunity to dive deeper into certain aspects of higher education and job sectors. We'll be talking about how to develop crucial skills, different interview processes, whilst highlighting different industries. Welcome to the second episode we've called Getting Into Media, Marketing and Manufacturing. We'll be talking about the media industry and taking a closer look at women working in manufacturing, because ultimately you need to know as much as you can about an industry to find out if you want to make a career in it. We'll also be talking about how your digital footprint can have an effect on any future endeavour.
A lot of young people will have social media already. And I guess this conversation leads on to making sure that the content that they're putting out is maybe representative of them in a positive light. And like with you saying, you know, it could be from a plumbing background. And if you're putting, you know, various bits of your plumbing industry online, that is marketing. You know, you're putting images of maybe the work that you're doing in whatever sector you're in, not maybe on your Instagram. And it's amazing how much, you know, a lot of people will be already having marketing as part of their lives, even all of us day to day. Is there any tips in, I guess, what we would know as your digital footprint for maybe any students listening? And any tips and advice on making sure that that's strong and things maybe not to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like I say, we all use, you know, digital in some form these days, don't we? There's, you know, so many social media platforms. A lot of people write blogs or online journals or opinion pieces, even comments on other websites. Like there are some people who leave comments on other people's blogs or niche. Obviously, if you're a copywriter, it will be very useful. But for any other role, really, will help. You know, it's again a good way to help you understand how to communicate and how to convey messages more clearly. But also, it's enjoyable. You know, when you're writing or making videos about your passions, and because all of these things are online, they make a nice portfolio that you could always send to a prospective employer or, you know, anything you're applying for. Again, just more than anything, showing your passion for something, that's always such a key factor when it comes to, you know, interviews. It's even if somebody doesn't have much experience in something, if they have the passion for it, if it's clear that they're not just applying for this job because it's available and it'll give them money, it's because they actually want to work in that sector for that particular business, you know, it can make a huge difference. But one of the big points I would say is it's amazing. It's very hard to remember that everything you put online just stays there forever. You know, it's like every day Facebook is like, we've got memories for you, and it shows me some from a couple of years ago. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. And some from 5 years ago, and I'm like, all right, okay. And then some from 10 or even 12 years ago, and I'm like, what am I talking about? What did I put here? This, you know, it's just a bit cringy or embarrassing. And obviously you can delete things from your social media, but it's always worth remembering that people will look, you know, it's not Facebook stalking, it's research in a way, you know. Absolutely. That you've put them online, all these social media channels, blogs, videos, they're public, you know, it can be viewed by literally anybody in the world. They are a really good way to get a feel for how somebody is and, you know, what they're interested in. So try to make your social media reflect who you are and the person that you want to be.
Absolutely. And with that, you know, you mentioned about how you can send, you know, for example, your LinkedIn, you might send that across to an employer, but you also might, if you've got a really active Instagram or any social media, you might send that to an employer. But it's also worth knowing that employers will have a look regardless a lot of the time, I think. And you, like you say, you want to be reflecting the person that you're happy for people to observe, I guess.
You see a lot of people, you know, saying like, oh, why did this employer look at my social media? You know, that's stalking, or this is personal. And unless you have a private account where people can only view if they're a follower, you know, otherwise it's out there. Everything that you put on the internet is out there. And, you know, some people are absolutely adamant. It's like, no, that's my personal account. I can put whatever I like. And of course you can, you know, that's up to you. But it's always good to think everything that you do in the same way that how you would act if you we're at a party or an event, or how you act in the street. You know, it's all a representation of how we are as people, how we deal with things, how we carry ourselves, how we act towards others, you know, in terms of respect and how we communicate. So yeah, just always bear social media in mind.
Thanks, Rach and Rich, for that reminder that to get where we want to in life, we need to be mindful about the stories we tell others about ourselves. Here's another conversation I had recently about narratives with Tom Palmer, co-founder of Ocean City Media. Tom talks to us about how the stories you tell and the connection you're able to make form the foundation of the media industry. From how you tell the story of yourself to potential employers and admission staff to the stories you go on and tell the world. So Tom works for Ocean City Media, as you might expect, in Britain's Ocean City of Plymouth. So Tom, could you tell us what sort of work Ocean City Media produces and what your role with them is, please?
Yeah, so I'm one of the co-founders of Ocean City Media. We were formed by three sort of former members of BBC staff. So we were editors and producers at the BBC and filmmakers. And primarily at Ocean, what we do is we make content and we train people how to make their own content as well. So we can either make sort of fully sort of fledged campaigns for you. We can spend a bit of time working with people explaining how to tell their stories, how to bring their stories to life, how to really engage an audience with whatever message that you might have. And we can also spend some time with teams teaching them how to make their own content using smartphones.
So are there a lot of organisations that come to you to help them with their campaigns and products, that kind of thing?
It's great. We get a really rich sort of diversity of clients from we have national clients and large national public sector clients through to small charities in Plymouth. And the beauty of all of that is that fundamentally storytelling doesn't massively change. What ultimately you're looking to do is to understand what the message is, understand a really good, find a really good messenger who can bring that message to life, and then make a nice sort of documentary style, mini documentary style film that's going to engage an audience. And the trick really is using real people talking about real events, and then you get sort of genuine authenticity in that film.
If you could go back to your teenage self, what skills and qualifications that you've gained do you think have helped propel you into this career now?
I always sort of wanted to be a journalist, really, from the word go. But academic qualifications certainly helped. I did fairly traditional things. I did GCSEs and A-levels and a degree. My degree was in politics. But the most important sort of skill sets that you can develop to work in our industry are just understanding how to communicate with other human beings, I suppose. So that's finding ways to engage with, finding shared values, understanding what it is that people will kind of react to. And the reason for that is you want people to really care about the messages that you're delivering, because then they might act upon them. They might share them or, you know, click on links, or there might be a call to action, or they might change their behavior, whatever it is you're trying to achieve with your campaign. So if I look back, I look at ways that I learned to connect with other human beings, I suppose. So that would be things, everything from stuff like, you know, down here in the Southwest doing 10 tours training and things like that, and working in a team with, you know, quite a diverse, different group of people. To doing GCSE and A-level drama, where you learn school, you know, in productions, you need to make connections with audiences, but also you need to work in fairly fluid changing environments. You need quite strong persuasiveness skills when you're trying to get, you know, lots of goodwill and people to go above and beyond, all those sorts of skills. And you tend to develop them quite quickly in all those sort of additional activities in and around anything from sort of mainstream education. And learning to sort of work together as a group. So, yeah, from stuff that I'm looking for as an employer, but also stuff that we look to deliver for our clients, are often the same. We're looking for people who can quickly understand how to connect with quite a diverse range of other people, really.
Thank you. So it's not all about the qualifications and the technical skills is what you're saying. I will ask you, though, where you develop those technical skills to be able to work in a production environment after you finished your degree.
So you're absolutely right. It's not just about those. Both are very, very important. So often called soft skills, aren't they? I kind of look at them as just fundamental skills, really fundamental skills for working with other people, irrelevant of whatever industry you work in. And then you obviously have technical skills, which is what you're taught. That might be software or actual technical equipment. My role at the business is I advise clients on the stories that they to tell, really, for their messaging. So I can identify stories, I can identify how they want to position their brand and what they're looking to achieve. We then thankfully have some far more skillful producers and filmmakers who will then go out and deliver and make and edit beautiful pieces of content. And then, having started the process, I then come in at the end, and then I will work then with the client on where to place that content to get maximum value from it. I have enough technical skill to know what good looks like. I'm also reminded of a phrase from somebody once, I think, on one of the cookery programs, who was very, very good. And they said, "I'm a good enough cook to realize I could never have been a chef. And therefore, I'm good enough to realize that without a huge amount of work, I could probably not be a genuine filmmaker in my own right. But I know what good looks like, and I develop those skills." I think just having a really varied career would be one. So I worked in newspapers, I've worked for the BBC, I've been in front of a camera, behind, and helped field produce. I've written stories, I've worked with photographers. So all the different, I suppose, ways of telling stories using all of these different technical platforms. I've worked with some absolutely brilliant people who do it. So understanding what good looks like really helps with all of those. And just having that variety, I suppose, in developing what you're doing.
So in terms of advice, it sounds a little bit like you're saying having a broad experience of different things within an industry will help make you more of a sort of well-rounded person, but also sort of employee or someone that wants to be hired. Because ultimately, we're talking about how to make a great CV or a great application. And it's about sort of how you stand out and how you sell yourself, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's why. All the time. So absolutely put in there your direct information, right? So put if you've used cameras, if you've used editing software, if you've, you know, have any kind of technical skill set like that, really, really valuable. So put all of that in there. It's really important. Put your academic qualifications in there, A-levels, GCSEs, whatever you may have. All of those things are important. But if you want the person reading it to remember you, it's even more important to put in there, which is why you're applying for that position, whether it's a place on a course or a job. I need to know, why do you want to work here? Why do you want to come and study here? What is it that you care about? What are your values that this connects with? Because then I might share those, and then I really care about your CV. Otherwise, you know, whether it's a personal statement or an application, whatever it might be, it's highly unlikely to look radically different to anybody else's. There are a few exceptions of people with quite extraordinary CVs that they might send in, or applications, but it's quite rare. And actually, the most important thing is tell me a story as to why you, whatever your name is, want to come and do this, because that is how I'll remember you. It's the same as exactly the same with job interviews. You will remember the person that you could literally told you a story that made you think, this person really wants this job, or this person is really passionate about this role or this organization, or they are bringing something hugely valuable in because of this experience that they might have. So tell a story as to why first.
So I guess you're saying the personal makes it unique.
Yeah. Otherwise, how am I going to remember your CV? Yeah. I saw it an awful lot, and I worked at the BBC prior to founding the company, as I said. And over the 8 years I was there, I either directly recruited or sat on panels for other people recruiting. I must have seen nearly 100 people a year, probably most years. And I can't, you know, the best ones were not always the ones with the most glittering qualifications. Now, that's not to denigrate academic qualifications at all. They're phenomenal. But they do tell me that you're very good at one specific thing. They don't tell me necessarily that you're really an optimistic problem solver. You're someone who's going to be really creative in a crisis. You're going to be someone who's going to stay positive in quite challenging circumstances. Can you engage with other members of your team? Can you engage with other people? Obviously crucial in our role that you meet people and very quickly you need to establish a bond with them. All of those sorts of skills you could be brilliant at, but the academic qualifications won't tell me which one you are until I meet you in person. And that's what I want to see. So you need to try and bring that out in your applications, because chances are I'm not going to get a chance to meet every single person. So you need to try and bring it out as early as you possibly can.
That's great advice. If someone was going to do a recorded application or like a showreel or something, would it still be all about the story? Would you have any tips for how to make something unique using different types of media?
Yeah, so with videos, films predominantly are brilliant at emotional connections. They're not great at detail. So firstly, only tell one story. So tell a story, tell it really, really well, but only tell one story, because if you put too many stories in there, it completely dilutes the message and people forget what they're watching. Secondly, ease off on detail. There's this sort of desperation to rush in at some point and shove loads and loads of information or text into films. You can put that in and around it. If you're submitting an application, you can have written it into your application. Don't worry about your film. The whole point, really, just look at it like this. The purpose of a film that you're submitting is to make people care about the application that you've written. It's not to read effectively your application on screen, because you've already done that. You don't need to. So make an emotional connection. Tell one really simple story. We quite often look at it in reverse with our clients, but it's still the same message, which is they will have lots and lots of messages that they want to bring out. And we will spend a bit of time in their organization, whatever it might be, it could be a charity or a big university or anyone. And then we will say, but who, if you were to point at someone, says that project or that person or that member of staff embodies everything that we're talking about, because we're just going to make a film about them, because all your messaging will just naturally come out. And that's the same if you're doing these video applications. You've really got to have, it's quite a difficult process, really got to think really carefully about why do you want this role. Quite often, get some other people to ask you lots of questions. Get some other people to say, to outline what your qualities are, actually. What are your skills? What are you good at? And make sure you're going to get an honest appraisal. If you get a load of people who are just going to take the mic, or you go and interview your mum, who says you're brilliant at everything, that's not massively helpful. You know, self-appraisal is really hard. And when they start pulling out all those things that you are good at, then think, how can I make a film that's going to illustrate those core skills and really bring those out and show what it is that you really care about? Because as soon as you start talking about what you care about and showing your values, the organization that's reviewing it will think, we share those values as well. Now we care and remember, we can care about this person. We remember them because they're interesting. I'll now look at their CV properly.
That's great advice. I think I'll be using that in future as well. In terms of where media as an industry is going in the future, you've worked all around the world. You've worked in London. Now you're down here. Do you think there's more of a future for industries like media in a sort of more digital age in the Southwest and more rural areas? Is it looking a bit more exciting down here now?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's an industry which is ever evolving. So, you know, anybody remotely interested in working in this sector, before you do anything, are you somebody who flourishes in a changing environment that you really look forward to change, I suppose, and that you're constantly learning? Because if you're somebody who needs everything, who sort of follows in slightly straighter lines and goes, right, I've got this thing and I've mastered it and I'm an expert in it, potentially not going to work, because those lines change all the time and you'll just find yourself getting incredibly frustrated. So it's an ever-changing world. What that has now created are lots and lots and lots of small companies who are flexible and able to move around depending on what it is happening. So you'll find a lot of partnership working. So you don't have many huge companies which have an animation team and a filmmaking team and a podcast team. Actually, in the Southwest, what you've got is lots of little independents doing that sort of thing, and then you'll start to work together, and then you can provide services. The beauty of digital technology now is you can work not only all over the country, you can work all over the planet. We've been filming in the last 6 months. We've done projects in London, Scotland, Birmingham, Southwest. We're just a little company based in a studio in Plymouth. You can pretty much do anything. It's a flourishing, growing market. But I think where it's really starting to grow are these small independent companies that have a good network of other small independents in the different specialist areas. And what digital tools have given us now is this huge armory of ways of telling stories, from animation to interactive graphics through to just straightforward filmmaking. There's a huge amount of podcasts, obviously. There's loads and loads of ways, immersive content now as well. So there's so many different things. If you wanted to house all of those skill sets in one company, it would be hugely expensive and you may not need them all year round. So what is actually flourishing are lots of small independents pocketed all over the country.
Just as Tom advocates for asking someone else for their impartial opinion, our next chat between Rach and Dr. Kirsty Claude, Professor, Plant Manager and Chair of Women into Manufacturing and Engineering, shows that asking people what and who they know is often very beneficial.
Today I've got Kirsty Claude here, who is, I want to say founder, but let me know if that's the wrong wording, of Why Me, which is Women into Manufacturing and Engineering, which is, I think the initiative is also taken with Greenport. So we're going to be looking at how to get into the sector of manufacturing and engineering today. So I guess the first thing is just a little bit about yourself, really, and how you got into the industry and, you know, a bit about your career, I guess.
Okay, well, so I started out in the industry as a chemist. I loved science at school, science and maths, that was me. One of those geeky people that always, you know, sort of looked at tests and worked out how you were going to pass the test. So I went to university, loved chemistry, did a PhD, and was trying to work out what did I want to do, because I actually didn't like staying in the lab all that much. Mm. And I decided to go and work in industry because I'd done some work experience throughout my life at university. I'd been going out getting work experience, and I'd worked for a company which probably doesn't exist really now, called ICI, which made paints and stuff. So it's the Dulux brand. And I worked there over a summer and thought, this is the sort of stuff I want to do. I work in industry with big chemical plants. So I found myself a job at BP at Salt End as a chemist, making acetic acid. So you probably not realise, but vinegar that you put on your chips, that's acetic acid. We make hundreds and hundreds of tons of it a day at Salt End. And I was the chemist that was given the job of making a better process to make acetic acid. So that's what I did for my first few years. Mm-hmm. And I spent 27 years working for BP. Wow. Not just making acetic acid all the time, though. So I developed a new catalyst. There was a team of us working on it, and we went around the world, so America and South Korea and back to Hull, commissioning that new process. And then I worked a bit in health and safety, a bit in operations management, so learning how to run big chemical plants, so taking things from test tube size to hundreds of tons. So that was fabulous. And then I went to work in London for the global bit of BP. So I started at BP Chemicals and then worked for the big BP down in London, and then got a job roving around the world, and then got a job in Houston running the operations for the offshore pipelines and onshore pipelines in America, and then came back as the boss for the whole chemical site for BP. So I worked for BP all my career.
Wow, big stuff then. That's exciting, and bit of travel as well, which is really great. With your degree then, you say you was doing some part-time work while you was doing your degree. What was that in? Did you just do like a degree, or did you do a PhD? How did that work?
So I did my first lot of work experience when I was still at school, actually, trying to work out what subject to take at university, or whether even to go to university. I worked for like a logistics company, and then I worked for the lab at one of the local hospitals. And that was the bit where I suddenly realised that's what I like doing, is chemistry type stuff. So that's why I chose chemistry at university. And then at university, I went and got a summer job working for ICI. And I was in the labs, but they had a big chemical plant outside. And I'm like, I want to go and work on one of those things. Yeah. So the reason I did my PhD is I'd worked out that companies like ICI, BP, all the big names, you got further up the chain in that organisation if you had a PhD as a chemist. So I didn't do a PhD to be an academic. I did it because I would join higher up the ladder in BP and I would get further.
I see. Tactical move.
Tactical. And that's something you've got to think about, is how you're going to get to where you want to go. And each industry is different. So it's finding out by spending time working in the summer with people who've done those jobs, I could work out, oh, okay, this is the next step I need to take.
Right, I see what you're saying. And I suppose we'll get into that as to whether you think that's still an important thing for maybe young people to be looking to do. But if you might be right in that it just totally depends on the specific sector that they go into and the job that they want, I guess. It just depends, doesn't it?
It does. But I would say work experience, try to find out what you don't want to do is equally as important as finding out what you want to do. So I've tried working in a shop and retail and working with people, and I like working with people, but retail wasn't what I wanted to do. And then I worked with this catering company that did the logistics of putting catering packs together. Logistics was interesting, but again, it wasn't what I wanted to do. As soon as I ended up in a lab, though, it's like, oh, this is the sort of stuff.
After you sort of left BP, then decided to start Why Me, for people listening, I guess you give us a bit of info on Why Me and how people can find out about it, etc.
Well, Why Me started back in 2016. I'd retired from BP and was thinking about what I want to do next. And they were building the blade factory in Hull for the Siemens blade factory for the wind turbine blades. So Siemens and Airco, an air conditioning company, were both struggling to get women to apply for their jobs. And I'd found the same thing in BP. We didn't always have as many women as we wanted. It's much better if you've got a diverse team. Because you don't always go down the same, well, we've always done it this way. If you've got a diverse team with different ideas, you get better products. It's a nicer place to work.
Yeah.
So businesses were working that out, but they didn't quite know how to attract the girls to these jobs, because whenever you Googled manufacturing and for a picture, you got a bloke with a hard hat on.
Yeah, of course.
So they wanted to change that and they didn't know how to do it. So I joined the little team and we put on an event, but we did it slightly differently because we read some research with there's a company called WISE, the Women in Science and Engineering Campaign. And they've done some research that said girls will naturally step back at a careers event. If they're going to some stands, the boys will step forward and talk about engineering with the standholders, but the girls will step back. So we ran our events that were girl only. So it was girls only coming to the events with their mums and dads if they wanted to. And we had women on the stands who did those jobs. So it wasn't someone saying you could be this, but they were an HR person. It was a welder or a design engineer or a fitter that did that job. And they were female and they were from around here. Yeah. So it makes a difference if you can see someone who's a bit like you and hear what their story is. And we brought along women, or we bring along now women that have done university route like me, but actually lots of them have done apprenticeship routes, and lots have also just gone straight from school and started on the rungs and worked their way up and done qualifications at night, weekends. It's not easy doing that, but they've done it a different way because that's what suited them, or that was the opportunity that came available to them. So sometimes it's the cards you dealt, you know, time, where you live, what the opportunities are like. And actually there's more apprenticeships now in manufacturing engineering. So in this new era of renewable energy, there's lots of companies that want more women to be part of them. And you probably don't know their names yet because they're not huge numbers of people that they're recruiting yet, but that's because they're still designing the plants. But in 2 years' time, they'll be recruiting.
So going back to, I guess, the younger people that might be listening to this, who might be at school and thinking about maybe GCSEs or A-levels, what do you think are the top ones for them to maybe be selecting in order to go into this industry? Or again, I guess it depends specifically what you're doing.
Depends what you're going to want to do. The normal route, everyone will tell you, is maths, physics, chemistry, biology. But there's lots of people who've done it a different way. So some people have done history and maths. Some people have done design and technology, because again, if you're doing more of a creative part of it, so if you're designing pieces of equipment, actually designing technology is quite good as well. If you're going into digital, then computer science, physics, that sort of stuff is really good. So I would say work out what sort of industry you want to get into and what is it you like doing. So if you don't like chemistry, then don't do chemistry, because you'll hate doing your qualification in it. But if you like design and you like, I think one of the key things, though, is you've got to be good at English and good at maths, because you've got to communicate. Mm. And basic maths is really important, whatever you do. So definitely don't drop the English and the maths. But choose something that you like. And I would have a look at those videos. So we've tried to get the women to talk about what did they like at school. So one girl liked geography. She's now a wind turbine technician. Now, how do you translate geography to wind turbines? Well, she's keen on the environment.
Yeah.
And she took that, but she was good at practical and she liked climbing. So she's ended up climbing, grabbing wind turbines in the North Sea. So again, you've got to work out what you like doing and how does that take you into a job? And hopefully some of those videos would help you see the stories that they've done. So one girl liked fixing cars. Well, she now designs boilers for Ideal Heating. So it depends what you like doing as a hobby and what you like at school, and then see where that could take you.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because I think from my end, obviously from a completely different sector and in marketing, it's when I look at your industry, which I don't know a lot about, you do think it's like you have to have exactly what you said, those specific GCSEs in order to progress. But you know, with you saying there's so many different kind of jobs within that sector, that it just go with the GCSE and A levels that you love doing, and then you'll find a route into that. I guess that's a good way of
you will. Yeah. And you don't always end up there's one girl, another girl did geography, I think she actually did it at university as well, and she's ended up procurement.
Yeah.
But within our industry, so there are lots of jobs. You don't have to be, and people think, oh, you have to be geeky, you have to be top set in maths to do it. I was never top set in maths. You have to enjoy it because you'll be doing it for your job, but you don't have to be the geek that's always got the top, and you don't have to be the one that always passes the best in the exams. If you've got a real passion for something, you will be generally good enough at it. You don't have to be the best at it.
Good, cool, good to know. So I guess then from that, carrying on from A levels, I guess, you spoke a little, well, you mentioned apprenticeships. Is that still, I guess, if you're going into more your traditional manufacturing and engineering routes, is that still the best option in the Humber? Or do you think, again, that depends on a degree or a PhD? Again, it depends on what you're doing.
I would find out what sort of job you want to do. So apprenticeships, you can do an apprenticeship in lab science now. So you don't have to go to university straight off. You go and get the job, and then the company pays for you to do the apprenticeship in lab science. So you can do it different ways, and different companies have different routes in. So Reckitt's are quite big into apprenticeships. So people like Ineos. So it depends what you want to do. And they have not normal what I would class as normal apprenticeships, but then they also have degree apprenticeships where you can study, and it takes quite a long time to get your degree. But you can do that while you're still working. But I would go and explore it and talk to people. So go to lots of these open events. So people like Heter have open events. You can go and talk to them and say, what qualification will I get? What company could I work for? How would I get in? So I would find the companies that you're interested in and look at their websites. The other thing to think about is, who do you know in your network? And if you're at school, you're thinking, well, I only know my friends at school. But actually, your friends have got parents and carers that work. So if you're interested in, I don't know, going to work for a wind farm industry, but you don't know anything about it, if you ask around, I am sure that within 2 or 3 conversations, you will find someone who knows someone you can go and chat to. And if they don't know the right person, they'll find you someone else. But it's a case of asking. Don't just sit there hoping that the idea is going to come to you.
Yes.
You've got to go and talk to people. And I know that's not easy, you know, brokering a conversation when you don't know what you're really asking about. And you might think, well, I'll sound like an idiot. There's no stupid questions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think people listening to this, anybody that's maybe at school and stuff, like, people are way more, what's the word, ready to kind of speak to you and happy to talk, happy to give you time than you think. You're not pestering people, because I think the fact that, you know, anybody interested in this sector, people are more than happy to have chats with young people about their pathway and where they, you know, how they get into the career. And so I guess the next question, which I think again will be dependent on specifically jobs, but in terms of applying for maybe apprenticeships or actual jobs, say you go down a university route and then you go to apply for a job in this sector, is it usually the case of CV, cover letter, interview, or is there any kind of testing that's involved?
It depends. It really does depend on the company. So small companies, if you take a company like Source, who does computer software, They will have a different, completely different interview process to someone like Siemens Gamesa, which is a big firm.
So I would,
if you're interested in it, try and find out someone who works there so you can ask them. But I would always have your CV ready.
Yeah.
But the key thing is, you will, if you go to an interview, you've got to know what you're good at, because that's what they're going to ask you, is tell me something about yourself. You've got to be able to present very professionally who you are and what you're about. And why do you want to work for them? That's the key thing, is why would they hire you? So you've got to stand out from the crowd. So I would say, find out about the companies, and they'll probably tell you on their website what the interview process is. And if they don't, when they invite you to interview, ask them. So there's no problem with going back to the person who sent you the email saying, you know, they've sent you an email, you've got an interview Monday, 9 o'clock in this place. Ask them, do you need, what preparations do I need? Do I need to bring any of my design work with me, or whatever it is that you want? What sort of preparation should I do? And they should tell you. And I would look at the job advert. So if you've seen an advert for this and you've applied for it, there will be some really key stuff in that advert. They'll tell you what skills you need, behaviours they expect. And I would look on their website. So some companies will have values. So they value people who turn up on time, or they value people that work in a team. And make sure you can articulate an example. So if they put teamwork on their website, that they value that, if you've got an example of where you were part of a team and you netball team, football team, whatever, and you won a game or you designed something, whatever it was, then have that as your example, because that's what they'll want to know, is will you fit in?
Yeah.
And you also want to know, will you fit in? Because you don't want to go and join a company that you're not going to enjoy being part of.
Absolutely. And I think that I remember back when I was, you know, fresh from leaving school and applying for jobs, and you forget that that's a big part of it, is this, you're working out whether this is for you as well as whether this is for them. It's a two-way, you know, it's a two-way street with interviews. And so don't be as nervous, because, you know, I think that it might be that you turn up and go, actually, this is not the right place for me. And that's fine as well. Any top tips for students?
There's a thing that I think it's Google are running called I Am Remarkable. So okay. As a student, it's not always easy to say what you're good at. You can generally say what you're rubbish at. Oh, I'm not very good at this. But actually, in an interview, you're telling them and selling to them how great you are. And if you cannot articulate that, they will try and drag it out of you, because that's their job. But it's much better if you can say, look, you know, I really want to join your company because I've read on your website you're doing blah, blah, blah. And I'm really good at, and then list out three things. And there's a little video on I Am Remarkable that Google have done. So it's hashtag I Am Remarkable. It's all over LinkedIn. It's all over the web. It's a little video that they play to help you work out the three things that you're good at. So if you work that out before you walk into the interview and have some examples of why you're good at those three things, you can bring that forward rather than getting stumped when they say, can you give me an example of something that you did that you're really proud of? Mm-hmm. If you come up with nothing, that's not good. But if you've got two or three things you can say, I'm proud of this.
Yeah.
That helps the interviewer, because they have to base their choice of who's going to be successful on evidence that you tell them at the interview. And if you can't give them anything, that makes their job a whole lot more difficult.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, that's good. I didn't know about that either, so I'm going to check that out.
And the other thing I would say is, if you want to join manufacturing engineering, there's another website that I would go to. So it's run by the WISE campaign, and it's called My Skills, My Life, and basically asks you about 15 or 16 questions. And it's not testing, are you good at physics or maths? It's what are you like as a person?
Yeah.
By the time you answer those few questions, it then comes up with the top three words to describe you. So the more it's describing you as a person.
Yeah.
So are you an innovator? Do you like communicating? So they will come up with the top three things, and then they will match you to 1,000 women in the UK who've also filled in those questions, and they'll show you the jobs that they do.
Thank you so much, Kirsty, for your time. It's been
You're welcome. And I would say, big thing is, don't sit there trying to work it out in your own little world. Try asking people. So come to our events, go to other people's events, and talk to people about how did they get where they got to.
I think all the guests in this episode are talking about the importance of personal skills, whether it be flexibility and teamwork and your ability to portray yourself to the best of your ability, as much as trying to convey the passion you have for your industry. For more information about possible careers and routes into them, go to nextstepssw.ac.uk/careers. Thanks to all the people who participated in the episode. And should you want to explore our resources further to discover the previous series of the HE Knowledge Hub podcast, go online to nextstepssw@plymouth.ac.uk or hop-humber.co.uk. You can follow both UniConnects on social at nextstepssw and Humber Outreach Programme. Thanks for listening.